If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now. Been listening to Invincible Bubble from John Medeski's Mad Skillet. While John fronts Mad Skillet, an interesting four-piece born out of New Orleans jams, the project is certainly a sum of its parts. The band includes the underappreciated Will Bernard on guitar and the Dirty Dozen Brass Band rhythm section featuring sousaphonist Kirk Joseph and Terrence Higgins on drums. It's a very cool project, one that I certainly would love to see live. I caught up with John Medeski fresh off a stint in Japan. Our conversation started when I complimented John for making such inspired and fresh music, not only with MMW, but with all the groups he makes music with. Of course, he responded humbly, and off we went.
Well, Brian, you know.
You probably don't think of it like that when you're doing it, right? You just...
Well, I mean, that's what you want, but it's a life of its own, you know.
Well, we're going to talk about Mad Skillet because the new record comes out in a couple of weeks. And this is a project that I think you got started at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival back in 2015, right?
Well, yeah. It's come together from two different angles.
Okay.
You know, it's basically, I produced a Dirty Dozen record in 1999 called Buck Jump.
Yep.
And at that time, that's when I got to work with Kirk and Terrence, and they were both playing with the Dozen at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I sort of had in the back of my mind, God, I want to do some kind of project with these guys. Like, I was thinking, maybe some kind of like Mahalia Jackson tribute thing, organ with, you know, sousaphone and drums, or I don't know, just going through a lot of different, but it just, you know, and life kept moving along.
Right.
And then Will Bernard and I played together. I played on a record of Will's called Blue Plate Special. And I think maybe the first time I played with Will was in New Orleans during Jazz Fest, one of those late night shows with Stanton Moore and Will. It was the first time I played with him, and I really enjoyed playing with Will. I'd heard Will, you know, for years, but, you know, we'd never really played together, so it was great. And then Will had me playing Blue Plate Special. And so out of Blue Plate Special, we started doing these gigs in New Orleans. I think the first time it was a late night Blue Plate Special, and then it kind of evolved into sort of its own thing, and we had different lineups because, you know, people from the original band weren't available, and it just sort of became like, well, let's do a gig during Jazz Fest no matter what together. And it was, you know, and Will and I have a lot of musical common ground and love hanging out, and he's a great guy. And finally, we did one with Kirk. And when the next year came up, that kind of the bell rang in my head. I was like, man, let's get Terrence. You know, we got Kirk, we didn't use Kirk last year, but let's use Terrence because it's like something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, they're like, you know, there's something about the bass and drums when they have a hookup that's really important in any great band. It's, you know, the rhythm section, it's about the bass and drums.
Of course.
Every band has a legendary bass and drums connection. And Kirk and Terrence are kind of like that. They have this, you know, decade of playing together and touring together and stuff. So we got them to do the gig and it was really great. And then, you know, we did it a couple years in a row and I finally just sort of got it together to record the band, you know, and, you know, we're still doing it. We've done a couple small European runs and now we have this big, you know, a bigger tour finally in November and the record's coming out. Finally, the record.
Finally.
Those guys have been bugging me. They've been bugging me for years. When is that record? When are you going to get that record out?
Oh, really? You recorded it a while ago?
Well, we started it, you know? But it's like, there wasn't a lot of interest. I tried to shop it around to certain record labels that I've worked with before, and everybody's struggling, and nobody was really that interested in it. So I had to figure out how to, you know, finish it and get it done, do it myself, so, you know.
Right, and between all the things that you do, who has the time to...
Yeah.
You're a busy guy. I mean, they're all busy.
Ultimately, it's better, yeah. Well, yeah, and, you know, yeah, so, exactly. So many other great things come up to go do, and I do them. But I'm glad it's finally coming out, because I think this band is... It's special. It has there's a chemistry. I mean, and that was it. It's just this undeniable chemistry that when we get together and play, it just has this life of its own. It's like we're, you know, just right in this boat, you know, or train.
So I was going to ask you about that because there's something about not just Jazz Fest, but New Orleans more generally that brings out such incredible and diverse music, but more to the point, such incredible performances. And certainly I'm sure those late night sessions brought just that out, and therefore you wanted to record with these guys and make more music with these guys, right? I mean, what is it about New Orleans?
Well, it's, what is it about New Orleans?
Yeah, how long is a piece of string?
Do 100 doctoral theses about what is it about New Orleans, you know? I mean, honestly, just in terms of my life philosophy, I mean, places are important, and there's something going on there, the Mississippi River, whatever the energy is, you know, and I don't even know what it is, and I don't think we have the science to figure it out yet, but there's something about that place, there's just something going on, you know, and the culture has fed off that, you know, and the thing is, it's still going on there. I mean, even though it's changed, you can talk about, you know, how it's changed and how it's not what it used to be, but it's still something. And that energy is still there and it's manifesting, you know? And I think, you know, what I love about it personally, just on a less esoteric level, mm-hmm. is the food, music. I mean, it's all connected, the culture, you know?
Right.
Like it used to be like that in New York City, you know, actually back, you know, especially when '80s and '90s, man, it was like, you know, there was this connection. But, you know, I think with all this super chef, superstar thing, it's really changed, you know. It's like the connection between music, the musicians and the restaurants and the chefs, and, you know, it's not what it was in the
right.
city, you know.
Right.
It's a whole different scene. It's like, you know, there's great food and great restaurants and great music, and New York is huge. But New Orleans, all that stuff is still going on. There's still like this love and respect of the connection of life, these things in our life that make us feel good, music, the things we need. I mean, we need something to eat in order to live. We can't live without food,
mm-hmm.
you know. We can't live without, you know, having something to do in our life that's gratifying is like something that we really need, you know.
Right.
You know, I believe music is something we need too. You know, I mean, it's like I think it's our greatest language. You know, for sure. And so it's like New Orleans has that all together. It's and when you go there, it just has, you know, such a history. You know, the kind of music that's from there, it's very. I mean, I think anybody who likes music even a little bit can recognize something and hear when it's like New Orleansy.
Right, right, right.
I mean, there's no question. It's got a fit. And when we play there as musicians, something happens too. Even though I'm not from there, I mean, I've spent a lot of time there. Yeah, every place has its thing, you know, and I think that maybe that may be changing now with the advent of technology, mm-hmm. as suddenly everything's available everywhere, like, you know, how uniquely different these different areas are. But I think the earth itself has a different vibe, different places. Like New York City is still got, it's got something going on there. There's a reason there's that many people there.
Right.
It's not just because it's, you know, on the coast. There's other coastal towns. New York's cold. Why isn't, you know, someplace further south, you know,
right, right.
what New York City is? It's because there's something going on there. There's some energetic something or other, you know, that feeds creativity and, you know, I don't know. And New Orleans has that in its own way.
Also, as a keyboard and piano player, there are so many legendary players that, again, are so diverse in their playing, much in the same way that you are. But, you know, from Professor Longhair and James Booker and Dr. John and Alan Toussaint, I mean, the list goes on and on. Certainly, as somebody who's a historian of the instrument you play, you recognize the heritage of the instrument you play in that city, right?
Yeah, and I mean, for me, it's actually simpler. I mean, because, you know, I'm not sure if I wouldn't call myself a historian because I don't know enough,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I'm definitely, you know, yeah, I'm into always learning as much as I can about whatever I can.
Right.
But what the thing about New Orleans, like in terms of what you're saying, that I love is that the piano remained an important instrument there, you know?
Right.
Whereas, like, guitar, in a lot of ways, like, guitar is easier to carry around. It's easier to play, you know, it's easier to figure out, you know, more quickly. And piano is, like, it's laid out differently. It's a whole other thing that, like, you know, it used to be everyone had pianos in their houses back in the, you know,
right.
whatever, 100 years ago. They could afford them. You know, even, like, you know, in churches had pianos or organs. And the keyboard, that, you know, it was in, you know, sort of a part of the musical life of the Western world, you know. New Orleans kept that going, man. It's like you're saying, all these guys, and it's still going. Henry Butler, you know, and all the young guys that are there now, you know, John Cleary's living. I mean, all the, like, the piano is still, like, key to the music and not, like, just the old music. It's just that sound, you know?
Right, right.
It's still there. Where I was like, you know, really, like, guitar has taken over the rest of the world, you know? And popular music and modern music and everything is like, so for me as a keyboard player, yes, it feels good, you know, as someone who, you know, tried to have a band with no guitar player for 25 years, you know, but, you know, I love guitar.
Yeah, well, that's good because Schofield will be happy to hear that you like guitar, I guess.
Yeah, no. Well, I love guitar so much that right. they got to be good, man. You know?
This record is more than John Medeski's Mad Skillet, even though that's how the record's titled. I mean, each of you brought songs to the table, and you were a sum of the parts.
This band is a collaboration, unquestionably.
Yeah. Can you talk about Will Bernard? Because I don't think not enough people know about Will Bernard. And his playing and his tone and the effects on this record are otherworldly. I mean, we talked about, you know, they have to be good to be a guitar player in your band. And he's just that good, right?
Yeah, Will is one of the most knowledgeable, versatile. I mean, he can play gypsy jazz. He can play, you know, modern jazz. He can play funk. He can play. I mean, he understands so much music, you know, and really has his own relationship with it all and his own way of playing it, you know. And I mean, the thing with Will is he's, you know, he's an understated guy. He's not out there like, he's not a self-marketing kind of guy.
Right.
I mean, he tries in his own way, you know, and I think, you know, like, you know, anybody, but he's not out there, you know, tooting his horn. He's out there playing his guitar and, you know, for the people that know. You know, for me, it was like, that was part of what this record was for me. It was also to get to, you know, to have Will be really represented the way I've heard him play, you know, and the way I know he plays and the way I know he is. And I feel like this record, you know, and I don't want to, I don't know. I feel this record does it more than anything else I've ever heard of his.
Yeah.
It really shows him. And, you know, I also, to be honest, what I did is I turned him up. You know, I mean, I feel like, I'm going to say it right here. I feel like on some of his own records, music's great, but he's, you know, the sound is so safe. And guitar, I mean, guitar, you know, here somebody's just saying, guitar is supposed to be loud, man.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And especially in rock or funk or into music, you know? And, you know, I like to pretend I don't like guitar, but I do. I love guitar. I love guitar. I want to be Jimi Hendrix, really. I mean, if I could. So it's like, we turned him up, you know, preserved his sound, kept it fat, you know, like that was it.
Yeah.
Totally, I agree. That, you know, and that was part of the intention of this band. That's why we recorded in New Orleans, because I always notice that when Will plays in New Orleans, man, he's such a sensitive guy, really. And you know, as any improvising musician, I think should be, where you are, the environment, the energy of the place, the kind of place it is affects how you play and what you play.
Right.
Because you're improvising and you're in the moment and you're in the place. And Will is very sensitive like that. And he just gets, you know, he gets loose in New Orleans, man. So for this kind of music, he's like, yeah, man, I want to record Will in New Orleans and I want to turn him up. That simple.
Mission accomplished. I mean, you know, from the slide guitar in the Heart of Soul to his little runs, Little Miss Piggy, I mean, it's all there. There are so many amazing parts. And just some of the effects that he has on the guitar, he really does stand out. And now I know why, because you've turned him up to 11.
Well, and it's like, you know, and there's a lot of space for him, you know,
yeah,
in this band to do his thing, you know. And, it makes me feel good that you noticed, because definitely part of the mission of this recording is to say, yo, Will Bernard, everybody.
Introducing a drummer and Terrence Higgins and sousaphone master Kirk Joseph. I mean, it's weird that you're saying this is a rhythm section, but I get it. But the sousaphone, how does he do that? Like, how does he... There are parts where he just keeps the beat and it's like over and over and over again, the same tone. Like, he's just a magician on that thing, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, how does he do it? Magic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
He's the best at that. I mean, he's just got a feel. It's like, you know, he's a bass player, you know, right? But he's not. I mean, he's playing, but the instrument is the sousaphone. So he's using his breath, which gives it a whole other dimension and a whole other, you know, foundation, you know. And but at the end of the day, he is holding down the low end, you know,
right,
which in, you know, most conventionally in bands is the bass player,
right,
but there is no one funkier than Kirk Joseph, you know. And Terrence and he are like, they have, you know, they have that telepathy that you want in bass and drums in a band. You know, where they're so connected, you know, that they move as one and think as one and act as one and breathe as one. You know, every great band has that. The bass and drums are like that. They're that. I mean, in any kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that if the bass player isn't happening,
right,
it's not going to feel good. It's not going to feel good. And it's not like some, you know, sort of, you know, regular non-musician listener is going to hear a band and be like, oh wow, that bass player isn't very good. They're going to be like, ah, this doesn't feel very good. It's going to be that simple, you know.
Right.
I don't know, for some reason this doesn't feel right, you know. And so it's really important, and those guys are, they're, you know, an amazing unit.
The whole unit is pretty amazing. I mean, it feels like there is some telepathy, not just between the two of them, the rhythm section, but between the four of you. So you're in the living room studio, which is in like a Depression era church, if I read correctly, in downtown New Orleans, across from the Mississippi River. And there the four of you are, and you're just jamming on each other's tunes and playing originals. Like, what was the plan going in to record this record?
Well, the plan was to record, you know, certain songs that we had done, you know, that we had been part of our live set, and to also come up with a few things in the studio, which we did, you know, in which we, you know, we would, you know, improvise and jam and listen and then go back. Or we not even listen. Sometimes we just play and then, like, say, hey, let's try it. We need to go to another section here and let's do, and then come up with, like, you know, we built Psychedelic Rhino and Tune It a Can that way. And then I also did a lot when it came time to mix it, too. I did some editing to pull it together, you know. And, but, you know, the mission was just to get this, you know, some of this music recorded, you know, and really just to catch the vibe. That's, you know, that was it. But that was easier than you'd think. I mean, I just think that, you know, like, I mean, traditionally in New Orleans music and, you know, also in the blues, there's a lot of ESP
right
to it. And that is the tradition, you know, and these guys, when you grow up in it, you have it, you know, and I got, you know, I would say that, like, jazz, you know, was probably like that. And I mean, I don't know how much it is now, you know. At its best, it always is there. But, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, when people are just sort of rehashing notes and rhythms and stuff that other, you know, people have done before, and they're just sort of copying things, and you end up, you know, it ends up being more like classical music. And the ESP isn't there. It's just, you know, it's more like they're playing the written page, you know.
The ESP kind of has to be there, though, for the improv to work, right? I mean, it's not going to be improv if you're all doing your own thing.
Right, and that's where I would say, like, a lot of jazz isn't really improv anymore.
Right.
They're playing patterns and things that, you know, we've heard before, and they're easy to follow, and it's not really about the ESP. It's about just listening and, you know, yeah.
I was going to ask you, who in contemporary music loves Sun Ra more, you or John Fishman? It does. It seems to me that.
Oh, you know what? We have shared our. I mean, John is. I mean, he has probably gotten to spend more time with Sun Ra than I have. I mean, I won't get too into it, but yeah, he actually shared this book with me that he had gotten from Sun Ra that's really amazing. And but I don't know. I think, you know, at a certain point, like, when love reaches a certain volume, there's no, you can't really, it's not like who loves the, who,
right.
You know, it's like,
which of your children do you love more? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or who loves, who, you know, do I love my kid more? Does my kid love me more? At a certain point, it's just like, there's a maximum density. And I have a feeling that Fishman and I are kind of at the same place.
it's just refreshing to hear, you know, a remake of The Golden Lady. And there isn't too many projects that you do where there isn't some kind of Sun Ra-inspired thing going on. And so it's just really cool. And again, Will Bernard's guitar playing is crazy on that track. Just this, you know.
Yeah, it's like he's kind of good. He gets all surf.
Yeah, all surf.
yeah, totally. Well, which is what the song called for. You know, that was like the groove we were going for. And I was like, you know, how can we take this tune? You know, actually, Medicine Bear Wood has played that tune on and off over the years, and I love that song. And it's just like, how can we transpose this into a Mad Skillet world? So that was it. Was kind of to give it this sort of, you know, semi boogaloo surfy feeling. You know, and then, you know, using the Mellotron just to keep it, you know, weird.
Keep it weird. Invincible Bubble, we should mention that the Texas Brownout Horns also appear on this record, right? And so.
Yeah, they do. I'm not sure if they're calling themselves on the record, but it's those guys. No, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely those guys. You know, definitely. And they put that arrangement together and played on that one. It's great.
You are touring this record in November, and I suspect that you're a kind of guy that, while you love the comforts of home and being home with the family and everything else, you actually just love playing. You're one of these guys that would prefer to just always be playing, right? So going on the road must be awesome for you.
You know, I like playing music. I can play music at home, too. But I do love getting on the road, you know, and you know, I need to get out there to survive.
Right.
So it's like one of those things where, like, you know, I'm making the best out of my survival, you know, my necessities and, you know, trying to, like, find that balance, you know, of
playing, doing what I love, but also, you know, I care with the audience. I care about, you know, that's probably what Mad Skillet is. I want to, you know, have something fun out there that people can listen to that I also really enjoy doing, you know, and that is fulfilling for me, and that we all, that as a band, we grow individually and as a band, you know. So that's kind of the idea. I do like being on the road. I mean, you know, I'm, at this point, as I get older, you know, uh-huh. I mean, I was on, you know, I started out like, we, you know, early years of Modesky Martin Wood, we lived in a camper, you know,
right,
for several years, you know, with no apartments or anything. We sublet our places and just stayed on the road for years. I think, you know, more and more, it's like, I love being home, you
mm-hmm.
know? And, okay. Honestly, I probably could stay home the rest of my life and be in the my garden and, you know, and feel great, you know, because I love it. But I do, I love playing music, and I love right. playing music, you know, with these guys, with everybody I get to play with. It's just like, you know, it's kind of what I spent my whole life dreaming of and trying to make happen, you know. And I'm still trying to make it happen.
I think you're making it happen, buddy. Like, who excites you now from a jazz perspective or just a rock, organ, piano kind of perspective? Who excites you? Who do you like to go see, and who's really exciting for you these days?
Oh God, there's so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's hard to say.
Right.
Because, you know, there's so much cool music out there.
But like, if you were going to turn on your, if you were going to, you know, what's the last thing you played on your iPhone, or what's exciting you? Is there anything?
The last thing I played on my iPhone was the tunes I had to learn for my gig with Warren and George and Joe Russo, actually.
Right. Yeah.
But
that was an exciting show.
Yeah, that was fun. I would have to say, I mean, I kind of always go back a lot to old, some of my old standards
yeah.
stuff, you know. I mean, I think, yeah, so I was listening, it's not that new, but the Coma Mamas, you know, I've been listening to. They've been around for a while, but their recordings kind of came out. I just, you know, discovered Shirley Ann Lee, this old gospel singer that I love, mm-hmm. and I've been checking that out, you know.
Cool.
God, there's so much stuff out there.
Yeah.
You know? That Halu Mergia, you know?
Yeah. I got to check
been,
that.
Yeah, that stuff is fantastic. You know, I mean, it's old, but it's, you know, just coming out now, you know?
I asked Chris when we had him on the show about an MMW record, and I guess between all of your schedules and all the things that are going on, maybe you're going to get together in the new year or something and start figuring
out. Well, we have something recorded. You know, I mean, we just put out this thing with Alarmo Sound.
Mm-hmm.
We actually from a couple of years ago. We finally got that out.
Right.
And we recorded something this past year that was filmed, and I think, you know, there's going to be a little film of it.
Right.
Of it coming out, and we're going to try to finish. You know, we have a lot of material recorded. And we're going to, basically December, January, we're talking about finishing that up.
Cool, man. Thanks so much
for
this record and for...
Yeah, of course.
I totally forgot about the fundraiser at the Cap and all the things that you do. I mean, thank you. Thank you for making the music that you do, man.
I can't remember what I do. It's a lot, but thank you.
Thanks, man.
It's a blessing to be able to do it all, you know.
Cool. Get the Mad Skillet record. It's crazy good. I'm telling you, it's real good. Thanks, man.
I think it is really good. I mean, I don't even like think any of my records, but I think it's pretty good. one is good.
I think it's really good. All right, man. Thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right.
Be well.
See you. Bye.
I can't begin to tell you what a thrill it was to talk to John, who is a freaking musical genius. Mad Skillet's debut is a tremendous record, and when you do listen to it, make sure you tune everything else out and pay close attention to the production, the instruments, and the passion with which each of the players play. Oh, and I know you'll want to get up and dance. That's okay. I'll encourage it. For Mad Skillet tour dates, visit johnmodesky.com or find the band on Facebook. Before we leave you, have a listen to another great track from the record. Here is Adele.
You've been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.